Okay, is the mic on? Yes. All right, so yeah, we'll be doing a live demo, so of course, knowing how live demos go before a live audience, it'll probably all break, but I have some slides just to give an introduction. So NRAM, we have a lot of users coming all the time, so the focus in the past has been data collection, getting a lot of data in an automated fashion so that someone, a biologist who doesn't know how to use a microscope, can come in, collect this massive data set, go home with it. So we've been doing that for a long time. So users show up, they collect these giant data sets, and they leave. And then what happens with the data set when they leave, we don't know. So sometimes good things, and other times we don't know. So more recently, we started focusing more on the post-collection aspects. We'd really like to be sending these biologists home with actual structures as opposed to just this giant chunk of data that they might not know how to deal with. And rather than develop new reconstruction algorithms, there's so many smart people in this room who are developing all these great things. We'll just, you know, use what's out there. And because we're relatively new at this, we're willing to try anything. We don't have any history with any particular reconstruction software. So if someone develops something new, we're more willing to try it out. I know when I started, Scott, the postdoc, he'd just been starting his postdoc. He was using eMAN. Someone else in the lab was using Tim Baker's icosahedral reconstruction stuff. And so a postdoc in Jack Johnson's lab gave me a spider script and said, here, have fun. I thought maybe EM isn't right for me. but I stuck with it. So this is what happens generally for single particle reconstructions. You collect data, and then you pick particles one way or another. You estimate the defocus to do CTF correction if you want. You create a stack of these particles. You reconstruct it in some manner. And then you examine the results. Those are the basics. Yes? The step that I skipped is?
Alignment.
So, okay, so that's somewhere in the reconstruction. Yes? This is very, very basic. And this is what we do from day to day. But, of course, before the pipeline was implemented, everyone was running through those same steps. But everyone in the lab had their own set of scripts and their own directory structure, their own way of looking at the results. So making comparisons between people was oftentimes very difficult. And because it was non-standardized, it's very easy to lose track of your own data. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have been there where they say, oh, I wrote a script to do this, but I put it somewhere, and that was 2 years ago, and I have to go find that script now. And you spend, you know, a month trying to find a script, then you get fed up and rewrite it. So this way, there was a lot of redundancy, and it was very, very messy many times. So this is now the reconstruction pipeline we implemented. We consolidated everyone's various scripts into this one concrete library that everyone uses these scripts, and everyone updates to it, makes changes, and if it breaks, everyone knows about it immediately, and everyone works to fix it. And this way, there's a set directory structure. It's easier to navigate and find old data. And everything, of course, has been stored in the database. And Denis and Bridget and Clint have all been emphasizing the fact that everything goes in the database. Everything is stored. If you do anything, it's the database somehow knows about it in some way. So there's no hiding from whatever happens. And also, this data infrastructure really makes plugins easy. The information is always written in a particular format into the database, and that information lives there. What's happening with the lights? So if someone comes along and says, I have a better CTF estimator for you, well, that data, as long as we can get the estimator to read the data out and write it back in a particular way, then we can plug that estimator right in and make our lives a lot easier. So we're not, also because of this, we're not constrained to any particular software package. And what this pipeline is pretty much a set of Python scripts that you run through the command line, a Unix prompt. And for an example, just to show you how easy it is, I'll bring up an example. I can't get to my, great. Anyone know how to open a unit? There it is. So, for example, I want to run CTF estimation on a data set. I type pyace.py, and it'll bring up, if you don't put any options in, it'll bring up a list of all the options that you should specify. And it's not that long, right? So we start in, we say pyace.py, all DB images equals 07 November 14A. Want to run it in the background, so background, and then DB images, and description equals,
This is much simpler
this is horrible. No one wants to do this. It's really tedious and it's really messy. So despite the fact that we have these nice Python scripts, if no one can use it, there's not much point in having them. So I need to go back to the PowerPoint. So like I said, very tedious to enter all the parameters by hand. And additionally, not all visitors and users that come to visit us are Unix-friendly. You put them in front of a terminal, and they stare at you blankly and say, where's Windows? I don't know how to how to function here. So it has to be easier than this. So to make it easier, we've developed a web-based interface to generate all these Unix commands for you. All you have to do is cut and paste from your web browser into the Unix shell. So your web browser is your reconstruction environment. There's nothing to install. Every platform has a browser built into it. So if you upgrade to Leopard, you don't have to worry about OpenGL problems. And so I'm going to go in and start on the demo right now. What am I hitting? Is that? Whatever. So let's assume we're collecting data. And this is our data set that's coming in. This is a CCMV mutant. And it's not very pretty, but we're going to go with this for now. We collected this during the course 2 days ago. It started on November 12th. And we collected for 24 hours. And I'll show you what we did to do the processing. So we up on the top, we click on the processing page. And this brings a list of all the different plugins that we've put into the pipeline. So first thing we want to do is data's coming in. We want to pick particles. So we go to template picking. But for template picking, you need a template. Okay, so where do we get this template? Luckily for viruses, it's pretty easy. You just manually pick a couple of particles, average them all together, and you have a very nice template for particle picking. So we'll go to the manual picker. Manual picker here, we enter a particle diameter. This is just so the database knows the size of the particle that it's looking at. And we don't want to go through all the images, maybe just 10 images. And I think that's it. Run manual picker. So this is now the Unix prompt that you, Unix command that you plug into your Unix shell. And I go to the Unix shell here, paste it in, and hopefully this will run smoothly. It won't break. Scott Skitstag developed this initially, and then Neil Voss souped it up to make it run nice and smooth and with a bunch of really cool features. Okay, so this is the first image from the list of images in the database. And you go through and very simply just pick some particles here, just the shiny ones, of course. And go to the next image, and these particles now are stored to the database. The database knows you picked those. So left-click picks, right-click deletes. Very straightforward. You pick several, and then when you're done, just close it. It's been saving all the particles that you've picked. Now you can make a stack from those picked particles. And I'll go into how to make a stack in a bit. So just assume we made a stack, and now we want to average them together. We can view these stacks online here. So this is a stack. I went before, and I picked 51 particles. The database, they're here in the database. You can look at them by clicking on the start.head. This is the Imagic formatted stack. Denis made a really nice browser here to interact with the stack. You can bin it. You can look at, by default, it only opens up 20 particles, but you can open up very, very large data sets, and they load very quickly because each one of these is actually an individual image. So we want to average these all together and make a template. You just click on that button, say these are averaged CCMV particles, and now you have the next command that you plug in and paste to your Unix shell. Okay, so I did that, and oops, went too far. I have a template now. This is what the template looks like. So we're going to use this template now for template picking. Use these templates, and all we need to do here is test it on an image before we let it go. So just to show that I'm not setting this up, I'll pick some random EF image. How about this? That looks good, yes? Okay. So this is the image that's going to pull out from the database and practice particle picking on. So we stick it in here, and because it's a 1K by 1K image, we don't need to bin it. And I'll run the correlator. So this is an option that it doesn't actually give you the Unix prompt. This is actually talking to one of the processors in the server room. So it's running the template correlator right now, and hopefully in half a minute or so, it'll show you the results. And based on those results, you can go back and manipulate what all these are, the settings, so that it works better for you. But these, by default, we try to fill these with good values that will generally work with 90% of the applications or the sessions that we run. So you can see there's the results. It was a little too stringent on the correlation. This is the correlation map based on the template. Hopefully it opens. There it is. So there's a bunch of peaks that were probably missing because we set the correlation cutoff too high. So we can just lower that to 0.4, and we'll run it again. And this, I wanted to stress the fact that this, once you set it up, runs concurrently with data collection. As an image is acquired, these scripts run on that image instantly. And so as you're collecting data, you're processing the data as well. So by the time you're finished collecting data, you've also got your particles picked and your CTF estimated. And you can go straight to creating a stack. So here are the results. OK, so if we're happy with this, this is the type of template picking we want to run on all the images in the database. We just turn off the testing and say, commit these results to database. And now we run the template correlator. So this is what you run. And it'll run in the background while you're collecting data. And I was very inspired by David DeRozier's lecture Saturday night. So I said, while you're waiting, you can enjoy the New York Times. So there's a link on all these submission pages that'll take you to the New York Times. So forget about watching DVDs. Keep up to date with what's going on in the world. So now we're picking particles. And in case you want to then manually edit the particle picking that it does, I mean, the human eye is the best for picking particles, right? So to get a started off with automated particle picking, but then you can assess the actual picks by using the picker editor. And so we go down the template run that we set up, which picked 16,000 particles. And for some reason, it's not keeping the particle diameter. See, we have to edit that. Bin by one, we run on the EFs. And we only run at process 10. So this is now going to bring up the same images, but with the picks that the template correlator picked on the image. And then you can go in and interactively edit the picks that it made. So scale this about 1/2. Say, that's obviously a piece of ice. We don't want that. That's not good. That's not good. If there's an entire region that you don't want, just say, I don't want any of the particles in this entire region. You click on remove region down here, and it'll get rid of all the particles there. Then you can go to the next image. And in this way, you can really quickly run through an entire particle selection that it did and get only the best, shiniest, nicest particles. OK, so that's particle picking. And now let me tell you about CTF estimation, how easy it is. It's a million times easier than anything because all you do is click on estimation. And these by default will work on 99.9% of all the experiments that we run here. You just click, give me the ACE command. You copy and paste this into your Unix shell, and it runs the CTF estimation, or defocus estimation as well. OK, what's next? We have CTF. We have particles. We let it run, and we can make a stack. But maybe you'll be collecting and legend on. Oh, yes, you have a question. It's from the data image. It estimates the defocus from it takes a Fourier transform. And Bridget briefly went over how ACE works. So this is obviously not very good because we're close to focus. But on the EN image, the near to focus image, you can see the CTF is there. And I think the ACE is incorporated into this. So this is it tries to find the first tone ring and then iteratively finds what the CTF is. And it plots it out here. So this is its CTF estimation, finding the defocus for this particular image. So I mean, all this information is going in the database. And right now, we're still trying to catch up with what's the best way to present it and what's in there that we aren't taking advantage of yet. OK. So legend on is not perfect. Sometimes it picks bad ice. It misses a target. So you want to have some way to assess all the images that you have. You don't want to necessarily use every single micrograph that was collected by legend on. So we have an image assessor here. And it runs on the output of the template correlators. So you can also be assessing how well a template correlator went while you're running through your images. So this image looks kind of cruddy. I don't know what's in the background. Let's not use this. So we just click on the X, and it'll toss an image from using it in any reconstructions. Again, this is bad. That's gross. Hey, it looks okay. And this way, you can really quickly go through an entire data set, getting rid of the bad images and keeping just the good ones that you want to have in your reconstruction. Okay, what's next? So now we have particles picked, CTF has been estimated. We are only using the very good micrographs. We can make our stack. So the stack creation. Here you just fill in a description, and you say you want to commit this to the database. You enter a box size, however large you want your particles to be boxed. If you want to filter them in some way, you can enter that here, but we're not going to filter. If you want to bin it, it goes there. And on here we have ACE confidence cutoff and particle correlation cutoff. These are filters that will get rid of images that you didn't catch as bad. But as Bridget said, every time ACE estimates a CTF, it assigns it a confidence value. And 0.8 and above are generally very, very good images. So we can use 0.8 and above. Also, every particle has a correlation value, and you can set a threshold for that as well. And in this manner, you make a stack, and this will run through and create a stack of all your images. And you can do this right as soon as data collection has stopped. So then you have a stack, and now we start with the reconstruction. It brings us to the point that we don't have a good way of doing initial models right now. That's the one thing that we're really missing, but we're looking into that, and hopefully with the advances that Neil and Craig are doing with random conical tilt and automating that, that won't be an issue in the future. But for now, you have to make an initial model somehow yourself, and you can upload it down here. Just say where that model lives, and it'll go to the database and keep track of that forever and ever. So now we're ready to do the reconstruction. We have the stack, and we have an initial model. Right now, we just have eMan reconstruction because it's kind of our model, it's our test bed. But in the future, you'd like to see eMan, FreeAlign, Spider, all the different forms of reconstruction, all the different software showing up in this part. But for now, it's just eMan. So here you have a list of all the initial models that are associated with this project. So this is CCMV, so we'll use this initial model, and you choose the particle picks that you want. This one has 9,000 particles in it, so we'll use this for the reconstruction. So this is a form that builds the script that will be submitted to the cluster. These are all the cluster parameters, the directories where everything is going to go, and here are where you fill in the parameters for eMan. We have defaults that we generally use. If you want to mess around with that, that's fine. If you want to add iterations, this is where you do it down here. Say we want to do 4 iterations at 5 angular increment, and for the last 2 iterations, let's use class iter equals 3 instead. Create job file. This is now the job file that will be sent to the cluster for refinement. So we click on that, and it goes to the Garibaldi cluster that has 1,600 nodes, I think, and it's actually launched that job that I put together. It's recon3.job. So I had one running earlier. This is just a list of all the jobs that you have running currently on the cluster. So now it's in the cluster. You can see this is now 2 queued jobs in the cluster. You can go to this and check on those jobs and see how they're doing. And so this is the one that I've submitted earlier. It's finished creating projections. It's classifying particles. It's getting to the tail end of that. And this is the job that I just started, and it actually hasn't started yet. It's probably copying over the information over to the cluster. But it'll probably start in a second or so. No. Anyway, the cluster talks to our database, and it lets it know when it started, and when it's finished, they'll tell the database that we're done, and a button will show up here and say, your job is done. You can upload this to the database now. And that's what I did with this one, a job I did earlier. So we click on that, and it shows you the reconstruction. Now, we started with a big sphere for this reconstruction, and this is one of the very, very few times that it found a false minimum with this virus, so it didn't actually go anywhere with it. This is not what CCMV looks like. But just to show you that you can start with a sphere in eMan and get a pretty solid reconstruction, we've had a very small data set that we ran in a similar manner. And I'll show you the results of that. This is N omega V, a virus, and it's uploaded here. So we started with just a big sphere, and within a couple iterations, it starts looking very much like N omega V. Now, this report page shows you a snapshot of what the density looks like with each iteration. You have an FSC plot, and the resolution reported by FSC 0.5. Also, we run R-measure, but R-measure, I think Nico knows, doesn't work all that well with viruses that have genomic material on the interior. You can look at the class averages of the reconstruction as it's going and see if it's going well or not. You can look at the good particles versus the bad particles. So these are good, and they probably won't look too different from the bad, but no, so these, this is a way to figure out what's good and what's bad by eye. And we also have an Euler map that Neil just implemented. This is the Euler distribution and number of particles in each class average. Because we had a large increment, I think at this point, there were not many spots, but if you go lower, you can see the Euler distribution. So there's a lot of information that we still are not presenting here, and we're trying to figure out what the best way to present all this data is. So that's reconstructions from beginning to end for a virus. But I was at a conference once, and I told someone I do single particle reconstructions of viruses, and they scoffed at me, and they said, single particle viruses, that's, they have so much symmetry. It's not really single particle. You're wasting your time. It's silly just to think that's difficult. He was obviously very bitter. So, just to show you that this can work for something that's not a virus, we have a mystical unknown protein that we collected data on. This is unseen ever by human eye or by electron beam. So what does this look like in the okay, so it looks kind of like that. It's definitely not a virus, and there's different views in there. Okay, how do we start working with this? So we go to processing, and I wanted to show off here at this point, instead of manually picking particles to start a template, to create a template, we have the dog picker that Bridget mentioned very briefly. And this was based on difference of Gaussians algorithm developed by Craig Yoshioka, who will talk about this particular algorithm. I think he's talking about it tomorrow. Yes, okay. And it's really great. All you put in is a diameter for this unknown virus, or unknown particle. It's about 140 angstroms in diameter. And you say, let's test on this particular image here. And we'll see how well the dog picker does. So again, this works just like all the other scripts as far as sending the job over to the processors, and we'll see how long this takes. It should run faster than the template correlator because all it's doing is, actually I won't go into what it's doing, but Craig will talk about that. So these are now the particles it picked without any kind of template, just based on the diameter of how large the particles are. So you can collect or run this on several images and create a stack. What happened? Did someone turn that off again? So you run that on several images, and you create a stack from it. And you can. We also have reference-free class alignment built into it. So you can submit the stack for reference-free class alignment. Is everything OK?
Wait 1 second.
They've all seen reference-free class alignment before. We have a similar form to submit a stack for reference-free class alignment. And from that, from the results, you can pick templates that you want to use. And we have a very nice little form for clicking those templates and uploading them to the database and using them in the template correlator to run through your data set and pick all the particles out. I think that's all I was really going to say about that. I can take questions in the meantime. Or let Neil go?
Yes. Slides.
No, that's right.
If you're rejecting the images, can you undo those?
Yes. So you can actually reject a particular set of images and try reconstruction that way, and then start a new set of images that you want to get rid of. So it's not, you can always undo any of these things that I'm talking about, right? It's not. It doesn't delete any information. Nothing is ever deleted from the database. Yes. It does actually a pretty good job. I know Pickway is using. Does it not do a good job? I think it depends. How large are these particles we're talking about?
Brings the tails completely.
For the template correlator?
Oh, sorry, dog, dog
Are you talking about dog picker or the template correlator? Whatsoever. I think if the particle is large enough, I know it doesn't have any problem with ribosomes, but ribosomes are also quite blobular. That's a good question. I don't think there's anything we have come across that's really not been able to work at all in any way. You might have to go through with the manual editor and edit those pictures and edit those images. But it's quite robust. I'm impressed. Other questions? Yes, exactly. This is another point I should have said. We don't want to forever be having to copy things over from the web and then go and paste it into Unix shell. Right now, we don't have a good way of just keeping track of what's running. So if you're running on an entire data set, you want to make sure that you're not running into errors or that it's failed in some way. So it works well for if you're just doing one image, and that's why we have it implemented for that. But eventually, yes, it'll be entirely from the web. You won't have to go into Linux or use a Unix shell or anything. So yes, it'll be all from the web with those little button clicks. Yes?
So some package, the box size is the even, but some is odd.
Yes. Then it would be pretty straightforward, I think. Depending on the package you're using, it'll say what size is the box, is it even or odd? And depending on that, it'll recreate the stack for you, depending on the package that you're going to be using. It'll maybe. What's that?
The
half pixel off center. I think you're right, because everything is going back, everything can be traced back to the original data set. So if your box size is incorrect, you can go right back to the original images and just click a button and take all that information that it used along the way and recreate the entire stack for you. So you're not, you know, padding things out or doing anything like that to introduce artifacts. Okay.
Maybe Neil should go right now.
Neil's going to go right now, yes.
Neil's going to talk a little bit about the implementation and availability.
Okay. Yes.
Is that my slide?
That's your slide.
Okay. Great. All right, so Gabe showed you all the cool stuff. Now I'm going to talk about all the boring stuff, how it works, I guess. So... I designed this little logo here to help it make sense to me. Basically, Legendon has all this data of the images and everything, and I just put that as here. And then basically what you do is you access this from something we call Appian Web, which is the interface of your web browser. It's all these scripts that do it. And then that points you to some sort of Python scripts, which has the name PyAppian. And then the scripts insert data into the database, which is then read by the interface, which gives you another script. And then you circle around on this until you get your structure out. That's basically kind of how we work it. Let me tell you kind of how it's implemented. So the interfaces, we just use the web browser. So it's kind of consistent on all platforms. And, you know, if it's installed somewhere, then you can use it on any computer. We're using PHP scripts, which is very helpful for querying the database. Denny talked a little bit about this Monday. It helps us do these SQL queries that he loves to create and everything. And it just creates a standard HTML form. So it's you know, pretty basic stuff. I mean, for anybody that's really made a web page. So the user interaction is the user fills out a form and clicks a button and then copy and paste the command line, exactly how you saw Gabe, and it kind of helps alleviate the suffering from figuring out what you need to type for the commands. And on the developer side, we use these Python scripts. And the reason we use Python, it just as Pavel said, you know, you just open it up in a text file, and it's a script, and you can see, and you can... And as Scott was very clear, you want to be able to follow the process it's doing. So nothing's hidden. There's no black. We try and move away from the black boxes. And also, we're not trying to recreate the wheel here. So, I mean, the reference-based alignment and multi-reference alignment, it actually calls and creates a Spider batch file, much like Spire does, and runs that. And as you saw, the other things create Eman scripts, and they run those. And for making the stacks, we use Eman commands. So a lot of it, we're just kind of borrowing from everybody else. So you can almost call us thieves. So the basic structure of one of these Python scripts is they loop over all images. And when I first came to the lab, Angie and I were almost discussing this, that we had different scripts that did the same task over and over again. So first thing kind of Angie and I did was to kind of create this kind of global structure. And I'm not going to talk about all these things, but basically we have one script that does nothing but loop over all the images, and it, you know, takes that commit flag or testing on the image. And also, if it crashes during the process, it knows where you left off and can continue from where you left off. If you're simultaneously collecting data, it checks for more images. It writes a log file so you can see exactly which command you ran if you don't want to go into the database and look. It also keeps timing statistics, and it tells you how long you have to go until it finishes. And, you know, whatever bell and whistle that we decide to add, and especially since when I joined the lab 11 months ago, I didn't have much else to do besides learn EM and put bells and whistles in. So here's an example of script. Basically what it does is it goes through all the images and bins it by two and saves it to a file. So you can see the structure is pretty basic. You just inherit the greater structure and define the function process image. And here we say, take the image data and bin it by two, and it puts it in a variable, and then write it out to an MRC file. And it automatically puts it in a certain directory based on the structure and everything. So this is the kind of the modular system we set up. You can see, you can imagine we can put in Eman commands or whatever we want in this little structure here, and it'll loop over all the images that we've collected with Legendon, creating a, you know, and do all these statistics and whatnot. So it's kind of a nice structure. And, you know, all the stuff that Gabe showed you, we have running on this structure, which is kind of nice. You know, we keep statistics on all these things, and everything's inserted in the database. So so now we have all this information in the database, and I thought I'd throw Vincent's picture up here, because he asked us, you know, hey, Bridget, why don't you do multivariate statistical analysis with all this stuff and tell us what the best conditions are to do it. And, you know, we just started uploading the Eman stuff, actually just back in June. So, and it, as you can see, our database for the processing, as Denny pointed out, is getting quite large compared to our Legendon database. It's almost four times bigger, and we've really just started using it. So we are working on collecting these statistical analysis, and, you know, you can't trust all the data, but hopefully with enough processing, we'll get something good. And so I'd like to show one result that Scott will be presenting on his poster tomorrow. This is not his figure, though. So what we're doing is we're tracking the Euler angles through all the different steps of refinement that Eman's running and everything. And one thing we did notice that, you know, we're very concerned about is the, you know, particles that jump around. We call them jumpers in our lab, just for kids. And we found that for one of our good data sets, that 42% of the particles were jumpers. And actually, when we remove these, the resolution was unchanged, but the detail of the map increased slightly. And what we found just from compiling several good data sets of GROEL, this is GROEL in this case, that the good data sets seem to have less jumpers. And if we randomly take particles out of a large data set, the number of jumpers seems to be independent of that. But, I mean, like I said, this is all very preliminary, and we're really excited about starting to address some of these issues about, you know, keeping track of individual particles and finding out what is the true definition of a shiny particle. So now that you've seen Gabe run through our Appian loop, you might think to yourself, hey, maybe I want this. But I thought I'd show the requirements that you need to install it. First of all images need to be pretty much collected with Legendon. You can do it with manual Legendon. I think it was Anchi showed that most of our images, like 62% of our sessions, are manual Legendon, just people going in and clicking a bunch of pictures. And they can actually still run the pipeline on everything. So, I mean, obviously you need Python for running the scripts, PHP for the web, and MySQL for storing things in the database. And then as of right now, we're using all these individual modules. I have Spider for the classification as of right now, and we'll eventually get to the reconstruction. And Eman for the reconstruction and several other tools, Proc2D is, and Batchboxer we use pretty heavily. We use FindEM for template picking, which is a publication that from 2004 amongst the big particle picking bake-off. R measure, as you saw, for the additional resolution calculation. Chimera for all the nifty pictures that Gabe was showing of his viruses. And the only thing that we have as a commercial product is right now is MATLAB, because we use the ACE program that was published for CTF estimation. So all these stuff is available for free, except for the MATLAB part, from the web. And so you could technically get it up and running. And what I would like to say is that, I mean, the goals that we set out when we designed this is that even beginning users can perform these advanced tasks. We have a common structure that we try not to deviate it from too far. For just processing images in our loop. We have these transparent Python scripts allow you to easily modify the code and figure out what's going on inside. And the results are all stored in a relational database and linked to the Legendon database. So when you have a stack, you can go back or you know, if you're looking at an individual particle, you know exactly what the temperature in the microscope room was that day or for that particle individually. And I'd like to recognize... All the Appian contributors, Scott, Gabe, and Anchi, really got this started. And then I came in, and we've kind of been doing the heavy development load. I'd say Sunita has been doing great work with the CTF estimation, and she's been working on the reconstruction part. Pickway is a newly joined graduate student in our lab, and he's started just getting his feet wet, and he's made some great contributions so far. Anka's done some great work with the spider and the multi-reference alignment. Craig, as they mentioned, developed our dog picker and comes up with great, crazy ideas from the image computer vision world that you'll see a talk on tomorrow. Jim and Denny are our in-house program experts, and they keep our code clean and neat and everything. And, of course, Bridget and Clint for advice and the vision for the whole thing. And so I'd like to say that it is available now. You can download it and try and install it. We'd like to remind you that it is a prototype only, and it's still kind of rapidly changing. We're not confident that the version we have is the one that's going to be great for all ideals. And we're only able to provide minimal support at this time. But if you're getting close, we can help you get over the hump. And, of course, it requires Legendon to be pretty much already installed and working. So... And you can pick it up at appian.org, which is a link to Google Code site. And also, if you want the web pages, that's included in the Legendon package as of right now. It's part of the DBEM tools part, which gives you that image viewer and the stack viewer and everything, which is at legendon.org. All right, I just like to throw this back up to remind you that it takes a lot to get it installed. So, thanks. Yeah.
Okay,
Gabe, do you want to...
Right now, there's no way. No, it's just the reconstruction aspect we've just implemented. I think about a month ago, to actually submitting jobs to the cluster from the web, and imparting it, putting it to the pipeline. So right now, it's just whatever the refined command is that comes with the Eman, is what we're using. But eventually, we'd like to expand upon that, and you know, kind of like the idea that's been talked about, where you use different components and different types of classifications and alignments. Work that all in, yes.
Yeah, and just one more comment is you put up the results and all you show is the surface, so the volume, a central section. But I find it's very useful to be able to see like the 2D average of the aligned images and the variance, because that actually can give you information about whether you're going to...
Right, and we have spots in our database when we were constructing it for that. It's just we don't have... There's no information going into those empty cells right now, but they will be filled at some point.
See the blank
page. Yeah, right.
yeah, a lot of the work is putting things in and out of the database, I think, or putting things in, really. So
do remember, this is all kind of a work in progress, where we're at a prototype that we're using our lab. Any other questions? Brad?
Could you say something about the architecture of the database? I mean, that's a very important set of decisions you make
Let me show you the database.
So we're using MySQL, and Denny and Jim wrote a kind of interface that accesses the thing, and it links everything together as Denny showed on Monday. Where's Gabe going here?
This is the Citadon.
Click on one of them so I can see.
Click on CTF data.
You can see that if it links to another table, it starts with a ref as in the top two entries. So you can kind of see how the relational database is hooked up, which is not required for MySQL. You can just kind of do it however you want. Everything's given an ID and a timestamp, so you know what was inserted. And here he's just jumping around. So if we're linking to an image, just go back one, Gabe. It just links to the, I think, what is this, run data? Yeah, so it links to a session here, and if you want a particular, like, CTF parameter or wherever he's going, it would just include the number of the image right here. So here's the ID number of the image table. So that's how it links everything together. Oh yeah. The script that includes all the definitions of the tables in Python.
Yeah. No one cares about this stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty extensive.
Yes. Juan has a question.
Yeah, fortunately, computer scientists are working on that exact problem. Oh, sorry. Waz's question was that we need a common vocabulary to move between these databases, which is a good point.